All right, buckle up, everybody, because today we are diving deep into a landmark election law case, Burdick v. Takeuchi.
Ooh, yeah, Burdick, that one's a classic.
It really is. We're going to unpack why this Supreme Court decision is so important, especially for voting rights, and we're going to break down that Anderson-Burdick test you always hear about.
You know what's so interesting about Burdick? It really highlights the tension between, well, a state's power to run their own elections and an individual's right to vote. We're going to explore how the court tries to balance these competing interests and how this seemingly small case about write-in votes had a massive impact on election law.
Huge impact, absolutely. So whether you're studying for that law school exam, just trying to keep up to date on election law, or are just curious about how it all works, this one's for you.
Let's break it down.
Let's do it. Okay, so imagine yourself back in 1986 in beautiful Hawaii.
Paradise.
Our main character, Alan Burdick, he's heading to the polls, ready to vote. But he wants to write in a candidate. Seems straightforward, right?
Should be easy enough.
You'd think so.
But Hawaii had a law. And this law banned write-in votes entirely. And this wasn't some, you know, random rule.
Right.
It was all part of a bigger system they had for how candidates could get on the ballot.
Like a multi-path system.
Exactly. So they had these established parties, but they also let people petition to start a new party or even as a nonpartisan candidate. And then the winner of this open primary, they move on to the general election.
Interesting. So it sounds like Hawaii was trying to streamline things, maybe even prevent those, what do they call them, sore loser candidates who lose the primary from, you know, trying to run again as a write-in and potentially splitting the vote.
Right. Exactly. Just to kind of keep things running smoothly.
But Burdick saw this ban as a violation of his rights, which is understandable. And that's how this whole legal battle got started. And what I find really interesting is how this case, which seemed like a local Hawaii issue, ended up all the way at the Supreme Court. So what happened? How did it get there?
Well, so it started in district court. And actually, the district court sided with Burdick. They said, yeah, this ban, unconstitutional. The court basically ruled that it limited voters' choices. You know, especially if someone didn't want to vote for any of the candidates already on the ballot.
Yeah, that makes sense. So why didn't it end there? Why did it keep going?
Well, because then the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, they reversed that decision.
Oh, wow.
They basically said, no, no, Hawaii has the right to regulate their own elections. This is fine.
So now you have two courts disagreeing.
Exactly. And that conflict.
Cue the dramatic music. Okay. That means the Supreme Court has to step in. It's like a legal drama unfolding. So now the big question facing the Supreme Court. Is banning write-in voting a violation of the Constitution?
Hmm.
What were the arguments?
That's the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
It all boils down to this. Does this ban violate the First Amendment right to free association or the 14th Amendment rights to due process and equal protection? And to sort this out, the court develops this, well, it's famous now, the Anderson-Burdick test.
Here it is, the Anderson-Burdick test. It seems like everyone throws that term around, but they don't always explain it. So help us understand. What is it?
Well, it's basically a balancing act, right?
Yeah.
The court has to figure out how much does a law burden someone's right to vote? And does the state have a strong enough reason for having that law? And it's not always a simple yes or no answer.
Okay, so it's like a sliding scale.
Exactly. And it's important to remember that the court's not always going to apply the strictest level of scrutiny. Like, strict scrutiny, that's usually reserved for, you know, more extreme burdens like poll taxes and things like that.
Gotcha. So why didn't the court use strict scrutiny in Burdick's case then? I mean, not being able to vote for the candidate you want seems like a pretty big deal.
That's a really good point. And this is where the context of Hawaii's entire electoral system comes into play. Remember all those different ways to get on the ballot? The court considered that when they were deciding how much weight to give the write-in ban.
So they were looking at the whole picture, not just focusing on the write-in ban in isolation.
Exactly. The whole context matters.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So what did the majority opinion actually say about all of this? What was their take?
Justice White, he wrote the majority opinion, and he said that while, yeah, the ban did restrict voters, he called it a slight burden. A slight burden.
A slight burden. Interesting.
Yeah, and his reasoning was Hawaii's open primary system. So because there were all these different ways for candidates to get on the ballot, the court basically felt like, you know, voters still had plenty of chances to make their voices heard.
Yeah, so the fact that that primary system existed really seemed to sway their decision. It wasn't just about the write-in ban itself, but how it fit into that whole electoral process.
Totally.
So did the court talk about Hawaii's rationale for the ban, like their concerns about, factionalism and all that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. They absolutely addressed that. And in the end, the court decided that Hawaii's reasons for the ban, like preventing factionalism, encouraging more informed voting, and avoiding those sore loser situations, they decided that all of that outweighed what they saw as the minimal burden of the ban. They even cited Article 1, Section 4 of the Constitution, the part that gives states the power to regulate their own elections.
Right, of course. So they're acknowledging that states have a lot of power when it comes to elections, but it's not like they have a blank check.
Right, exactly. They made it clear that any restrictions on voting, they have to be reasonable, and they can't be discriminatory against certain viewpoints or candidates. It's like states can set some ground rules, but they can't just build a wall to keep people out of the process. You know what I mean?
Makes sense. It's a balancing act, right? Mm. Protecting the integrity of elections while also making sure everyone has a fair chance to participate.
That's it.
But I bet not everyone was happy with the decision. What did the dissent have to say about all this?
Oh, the dissent was strong. Justice Kennedy, along with Justices Blackmun and Stevens, they argued that the majority was way too dismissive of the ban's impact, especially in like those less competitive districts where you might only have one candidate running.
Yeah, I could see that.
Right. Like imagine being a voter in that situation and the write-in option is your only way to express that you're not satisfied with the choices.
Yeah, if you're stuck with a candidate you really don't like, not being able to write in someone else would feel pretty disenfranchising, I imagine.
And that's exactly what Justice Kennedy argued. He even wrote, "The right to vote includes the right to reject all candidates."
Powerful statement.
Yeah. He was saying that for him, this ban wasn't just about procedure. It was a symbolic attack on the very idea of democratic participation.
So it wasn't just the practical effect. It was also the message it sent. Like, write-in votes, even if they're not used that often, they're kind of like a safety valve, a way for voters to say they're not happy and they want something different. Did the dissent agree with Hawaii's arguments about preventing factionalism and sore loser candidates?
Yeah, not really, no. They actually pushed back on those justifications. They basically said there wasn't much evidence to support those claims and saw it as the state, making assumptions about how voters would behave instead of addressing a real problem.
Interesting. So we've got these two perspectives clashing. The majority focused on the state's authority to run its elections.
Mm.
And the dissent really emphasizing the potential for disenfranchisement and the symbolic importance of voting rights.
Mm.
That's a pretty fascinating debate, both legally and philosophically.
It really shows how complex election law can be, right?
Yeah. But going beyond those arguments, Burdick v. Takushi has had a lasting impact, right?
Yeah.
It's shaped how we approach these election law challenges even today.
Totally. And it pops up all the time.
It does.
Like anytime you're talking about modern voting rights issues, Burdick is right there in the conversation.
So how has it been used? What are some of the big takeaways?
Well, for one, Burdick v. Takushi really solidified the Anderson-Burdick test as the standard for how we evaluate these election law challenges. It's used all the time in all kinds of cases, from voter ID laws to ballot access cases. It's become like the go-to framework.
So it's become like the legal measuring stick, right?
Exactly. It's how we figure out whether a law crosses that constitutional line when it comes to voting rights.
And we're seeing its influence in a lot of these high-profile legal battles around the 2020 election, too, especially those cases about mail-in voting. A lot of those challenges ended up being analyzed using those principles from Burdick.
Yep.
It's amazing how a case from the 80s is still shaping how we approach voting rights now in the 21st century. What a legacy, huh?
It is pretty wild. It's a foundational case for sure. But it's important to remember that, these legal precedents, they're constantly being interpreted and reinterpreted as new situations come up.
Right. Law is not static. So even though Burdick gives us this framework, it's not like it's set in stone. The courts have to apply these principles. They have to consider all the unique facts of each case, and they have to keep in mind how the whole landscape of voting rights is constantly changing. Right.
You got it. Law is a living thing, always evolving. And Burdick v. Takushi is a perfect example of how one case can have this ripple effect that goes way beyond its initial context.
That's so true. This has been a really insightful deep dive, I have to say. For those of you listening out there who, maybe you're thinking about becoming lawyers someday, what would you say is the most important thing to learn from Burdick?
That's a great question. I think Burdick teaches us that election law isn't just about, you know, the technical rules and procedures. It's really about something much bigger. It's about the foundation of our democracy, the right to vote, and that delicate balance between our individual liberties and, you know, the collective need to make sure elections are fair and run smoothly.
It's about making sure everyone has a voice and that the system actually works for everyone, not just a select few. Exactly.
It's pretty inspiring when you think about it that way.
It really is. And I think, especially for lawyers, this case shows how important it is to understand not just like the letter of the law, but also the spirit of the law, you know, how it actually affects people's lives. It's about using your legal skills to make sure justice is done, especially when we're talking about something as fundamental as the right to vote.
Well said. So, as we wrap up our deep dive into Burdick v. Takushi, do you have any final thoughts for our listeners?
Well, to answer your question, I think one of the best examples is voter ID laws.
Ah.
They've been such a controversial issue for years, with strong arguments on both sides. You know, those who support voter ID laws, they say it's all about preventing fraud, while those who oppose them argue that they disproportionately disenfranchise minority voters, making it harder for them to vote.
Right, right. A lot of debate there. And I bet the Anderson Burdick test comes into play here. You know it. It's the test that courts use to decide if these voter ID laws are constitutional. They look at how much of a burden a specific ID requirement places on voters. You know, is it a big hassle or is it relatively easy to comply with? And then they weigh that against the state's interest in preventing voter fraud. And the outcome? Well, it really depends on the specifics of the law and what evidence is presented about how it's affecting people.
So it's not just a blanket statement like all voter ID laws are good or all voter ID laws are bad. It's all about the details and how those details play out in real life.
Exactly. It's that balancing act again.
So what about other areas of election law? Where else does Burdick come into play?
Well, think about ballot access. Like, what are the rules for third-party candidates who want to get their names on the ballot? Or the requirements for independent candidates gathering signatures?
Yeah, all those hoops candidates have to jump through.
Exactly. All of that gets analyzed through the lens of Anderson Burdick, too. The courts have to figure out if these rules are reasonable or if they create an unfair burden on candidates or voters. It's all about making sure the playing field is level while also protecting the integrity of the whole election process.
It's fascinating how this one case, Burdick, has had such a huge impact on how we think about and approach election law. It's almost like it's become the foundation of modern voting rights litigation.
It's definitely a foundational case. But we also have to remember that legal precedents, you know, they're constantly being interpreted and reinterpreted as new situations come up.
So Burdick gives us the framework, but it's not a rigid, unchanging rule. The courts have to adapt.
Absolutely. They have to think about each case individually, look at the specific facts, and consider how voting rights are evolving in our country. Law isn't static. It's a living thing, always changing and adapting. And Burdick v. Takushi is a great example of how a case can have a lasting impact that goes way beyond its initial context.
It's really incredible to see how the law evolves like that. Well, this has been an incredibly insightful deep dive. Any final thoughts for our listeners before we sign off?
You know, as we've been discussing, there's this constant tension between individual rights and the need for, you know, well-regulated elections. It's a theme that runs through American history, and it's still relevant today. Just think about all the debates we're having right now about voting access, voter ID laws, election security. All of these tie back to those same questions raised in Burdick v. Takushi.
It really highlights that these aren't just abstract legal issues. They have real-world consequences for people and for the future of our democracy.
Exactly. And that's why it's so important for all of us, not just lawyers, to engage with these issues, to understand the legal principles involved, and to participate in the conversation about how we can create a more just and equitable election system.
So well said. To all of our listeners out there, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep those legal minds sharp.
And don't forget to vote.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll see you next time.